Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Well, Goldilocks is back in the house. WeWork, looking at the ramifications of a deal gone bad. Market breadth questions as participation is waning, and historic events in the investment world. All this and much more on episode number 631 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And a very, very happy October to you. I'm Andrew Horowitz, and I am the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, as well as the co-host of DH Unplugged, where we get together each and every Tuesday, except for this Tuesday. This Tuesday is a holiday. We're not having a show with John C. Dvorak this Tuesday, but we'll be back, and we'll be talking about all the things that are fit to really dissect when it comes to the financial markets. But here we are today. We're talking about investments and finance and markets and everything in between. I want to thank you so much for all of your great letters and emails this week. I think that, I guess it was prompted by last week's discussion on the idea of diversification. And specifically, we talked about the whole notion of adding style diversification. And I think that really hit home with a lot of people. And many listeners really felt that that was something that, well, they didn't have in their portfolio and something that they thought maybe would be a good idea to consider, and maybe something they didn't hear about in the past. So that was taken pretty well. That was episode number 630. You can check that out over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And I think also with all of the wacky and the wild and the kind of head-scratching news that we constantly are being assailed with, that discussion in particular with the idea that, well, markets may be able to consume and deal with and just put aside a lot of this news. There may be a time that markets finally cave in and say, you know, I'm not really interested in this anymore. A lot of people from a lot of the letters I've received recently and emails have said, you know, what's going on here and how are we supposed to really understand the long term if we're constantly finding that the information goes back and forth and it's two-sided? Who do we believe? Where do we go to? What do we really grab onto? And it's a hard question. And in fact, it's something that I've been wrestling with for a while. Obviously, I subscribe to a whole host of different news and analysis sources that I pay for, but a lot of people don't want to pay for things. And I understand that. You want to be able to get information. But the problem is the way that you're paying, the way that you're getting your information may be free from a dollar and cent standpoint, but it may be very costly from a bias standpoint. And there's a lot of biases, whether you have investment biases, you have political biases. You know, you really could rack up a lot of different ways that the media and the information that you consume is creating these ways of trying to shape what you're discussing. We talked about this a few episodes back where we kind of got into the idea of looking at confirmation bias and various bubbles that you have no control of because the information that you're getting may be somewhat one-sided. And I've been wrestling with this also in terms of my information. A lot of times I'll go on Twitter because I've posted and follow a lot of people that have really good information. But what's happening is that the people that they follow are starting to bleed over into my feed. And a lot of that is stuff that I don't want to see. So I have to question whether I totally clean up my Twitterverse, get rid of a lot of people I'm following, try to refocus on just those places and maybe don't somehow get information about who they're following. I don't know. But Twitter's getting pretty, I think, congested in a lot of ways. And you have to be really careful about what you're listening to and reading on that, because it could get a little, I would say, lopsided. So if you want to give me your thoughts, of course, you can just hop on over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click on the Ask Andrew button, and just right away. So what do we have to cover this week? Well, I think we need to start probably with a recap of what we saw last week, because there's a lot going on in that discussion. And let's really focus in on the eco trends first. And yeah, there was some concerning signs, some things that we really need to get into. So first up is the ISM manufacturing report. Now, this is a component of the economy that has been slowing down. It has been showing signs of strain. And in a sense, this it's only about approximately 30% of the overall economy. And we've talked about that a lot. And it's been put to the side by many analysts who are saying that, you know what, don't worry about this. We're in probably a manufacturing recession, but the fact is that it's only a small part. The U.S. is really not a manufacturing, you know, we don't have a big manufacturing base any longer. And it's not the most important part of our overall economy. You know, services and the consumer, that's really what we need to focus in on. But I think there really is something to be said about how weak the ISM manufacturing number has come out. So let's get through this and kind of dig down a little bit into some of the numbers that came out last week and really project out what that's telling us. So the number came in at 47.8. The prior was 49.1. And as you know, because my listeners know this, 50 is the demarcation point between expansion and contraction. So 47 is clearly in the contraction zone. We saw it down to the 30s back at the lowest of low points back in 2008, 2009. But really, we haven't seen a number as low as this since 2009. Now, when we dig down and we look into the components that make up the ISM manufacturing survey, the index that's reported is made up of a whole host of different components. And let me tell you some of these and read these off to you, because I think they're really interesting and you'll get the point about really how bad things have become. New orders edged up a little bit, so that's good. We're seeing that the new orders went from 47.2 to 47.3. And what that means is that orders were starting to pick up a little bit. Still in contraction zone, but yet there are some orders that are coming in. The new export orders index dropped to 41 from 43.3. That's a really bad number. As a matter of fact, it's so bad, if you take a look at the chart from where we were back in 2018 or so to where we are now, it looks like just an absolute drop off a cliff. The production index dropped to 47.3 from 49.5. The backlog of orders index decreased to 45.1 from 46.3. And the employment index dropped slightly, 46.3 from 47.4. Now, this information I get from a variety of sources. This particular one was from briefing.com. I have a paid subscription to this. And again, just from what I talked about earlier, just getting the facts right here. Now, I think the key takeaway from this report, the thing that we really need to focus on in regard to, okay, what is it telling us? How are we supposed to take this information and now absorb this into what's really going on? And I think that the contraction that we're seeing right now is clearly due to trade uncertainty and trade wars and all of the things that are happening, because the main component that really saw the biggest hit was export orders. And I put a chart of this over on the show notes for this episode. So you can go over there to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. 631 is the episode. And take a look at this. And you'll see exactly what I'm talking about here. Because this is not just a one-off, like, it slipped this month. No, it's been really coming down for months upon months upon months. The index itself, as well as this component in particular, and exports have been slowing down. Now, all the conversation about, well, the trade war doesn't really hurt us, it hurts them more. This number is a direct reflection of how the trade war is impacting our manufacturing component. While it is only 30% of the overall, think about this. It is an important component because it affects 30% of our overall output and our GDP, essentially. Now, there's a lot of other parts of GDP, but I'm saying from the manufacturing or service sector, this is pretty bad. This number is not something we could just say, Now, you could say it's bottoming. Maybe we're getting towards the bottom of this right now, and maybe it's going to, you know, the slowdown is going to slow at this point. Maybe the trajectory of the slowdown will, you know, with no more tariffs that are going on, which they are, and more increases, maybe we're going to hold off on that, but we're not. But yet the same point is that we're seeing a lot less exports go out of our country to other countries. And that's probably due to this whole trade conflict that we're seeing. All right, I'm not going to get into the whole weeds about this and this whole discussion we've been having. It's clear. I'm not going to even explain why this is anymore, because it's apparent. It's right here in black and white. And according to the ISM, when they look at the past relationships between the index of manufacturing and the overall economy, what they can project is what they believe would be the outlook for GDP for the next quarter. And right now, when you take this number at 47.1 and all the subcomponents of the number, we're looking at somewhere of a GDP of about 1.5%. So that looks like what it's going to be potentially for next quarter. And remember, that's something that is, if in fact we hold where we are now, that's the projection. And I think if you really focus in on what we've been talking about for some time, and this is not trying to look for a confirmation of what we've been talking about, it's really a reality. I really don't see a particular reason that at this point, the whole thesis that we've been talking about for the last year, the whole pull forward effect is in play. There's no reason to believe at all that it's not there. There's no reason to think that, well, it's not going to happen this time and this time is different. This is exactly the game plan of what was to be being realized. Now, it was a little bit longer than I thought. I thought it was going to be hitting in towards the first part of, well, I thought it was going to be the first quarter. So that would have been, the first quarter's numbers would have been March, April, May. So I'm off by a couple of months. But we're seeing it as clear as day make its way through the economy right now. And if you want a real quick reminder, the pull forward effect is a condition, essentially where companies will know that there's going to be a price increase in the future. And what they do is they do everything they can to stockpile goods ahead of a price increase. And then what we find is that once that stockpiling ends and they get all the goods they need, and in fact, too much in their inventories, demand essentially for those products falls off a cliff. Now, the only thing that can happen that could really change that environment is if somehow there was an incredible demand for final goods somewhere down the line. And while the U.S. economy was in pretty good shape for the first half of the year, probably what happened was that there was a bit of a postponement. And again, I put this chart on the disciplineinvestor.com on the show notes. I think it really bears some significance here. And I really think that this condition is it's painfully clear. And the move that started coincides to when the tariffs were put on. And it's not only evident by the numbers that are coming out here, but it's frankly pretty worrisome. I mean, we saw a level of 60 down to 41. 41! Levels not seen since when the world was collapsing. I mean, No wonder when the number came out this week that markets sold off so aggressively. The reality has hit. We are now seeing the after effects of all of this. The pull forward effect will probably last for several more months. Then we'll see some kind of a consolidation or maybe a slowdown of the descent and a leveling off. But wait, what about the services? Because, you know, while all the pundits are talking about how, all right, we're in a manufacturing recession, and, you know, that's only a smaller part of the economy, but really the consumer is the one we're really concerned about, and the ISM services have been holding up. Well, where are we now? Well, let's take a look at it. Because this was going to be, it was supposed to be the one area that was holding up and was going to be the linchpin, and, you know, the consumer will always save us. The consumer is strong. Confidence is high. And again, this is what has been told to us. Don't worry about the manufacturing sector because it's a small part. And this conversation was reinforced on a regular basis. You know, we're in a manufacturing recession. The consumer's still strong. How many times have we heard that over the last several months? Well, the problem is now what do they have to go on? Because the ISM non-services, non-manufacturing, or the services index for September fell. It came in at 52.6. Now, the good news, let's start with that. It's still in expansion mode. That's good. Consensus, though, was for 55.5. August, 56 was the actual print. 56.4 was the actual print in August. But now let's dig down on this one. Let's get down into the numbers and find out what's actually happening and how we're seeing the ISM services, which was the number that we were supposed to be really focusing on and not to worry about the manufacturing. New orders in the service sector fell to 53.7 from 60.3 in the prior month. The employment index dropped to 50.4 from 53.1. The backlog of orders increased to 54.0 from 49, meaning that there's a lot of backlog of orders. Does that mean that people aren't taking delivery or that they can't, they've decided against it? Or is it something different in the service process? I mean, there's a couple of different ways to look at the backlog. So I'm going to use that as a positive. That we have a backlog of orders, but you can kind of go in a couple different ways on that one. The prices index rose to 60 from 58. So services have slowed. Prices have gone up. Of course, that's not showing through in the overall inflation numbers. But the fact is that now all of a sudden we're seeing the consumer wobbling. We're seeing that not only is manufacturing in a pretty good recessionary position, but non-manufacturing or services is also starting to slow. And of course, you can make the argument and you can say, well, it's 1 month that really, no, it's been slowing down a bit. Again, still in expansionary mode, but when you take the two together and you look at this, you have to really stop and say, you know, it's very apparent that the economy is starting to slow. When we look at factory orders, we look at the jobs numbers, came out last week. Even though we have a 3.5% unemployment rate, the jobs number, the additions to new payrolls, is clearly slowing down. Now, when we look at this same number in terms of GDP forward and the and what the ISM looks at in terms of a relationship between the services and the economy, this is showing that the economy potentially is growing at 1.4% in real GDP on an annualized basis. And we take the older number that we talked about with regard to manufacturing at 1.5%, and we look at this number at on this. I mean, what are we saying? I think what we're saying is that the GDP number that's going to be coming out over the next several quarters is definitely going to be sub 2%. It's no question. Now, blame who you may. You want to blame the Fed. I think it's weak footing if you do that. If you want to blame the global condition and the concern about companies, I think that's squarely where this all lies. The fact that there's uncertainty surrounding trade, companies are pulling back on capital investment. I think that's probably more suited for this argument than, oh, the Fed has to reduce rates more. Because rates are pretty low overall. And it's no wonder why, right? If you think about this, when you take these numbers together, they were pretty bad. And it really sent markets into a tizzy. I mean, we saw that on the manufacturing number, we saw a major drop of the markets. On the services number, when the number came out, once again, the markets dropped pretty significantly and almost to a point that when you look at the two, it got to a point that the numbers were so bad that I think a lot of investors said, well, if that's the case, then you know the Fed's really back in play at this point. So with that, the idea that, well, numbers are slowing down, the Fed is definitely going to come into play. Bond yields flushed lower, and that's the key. That's the tell. If you want to know what the Fed's going to do, watch the bond rates, right? Where the expectations are for if, in fact, the Fed's going to reduce rates in the future, and that can be very much seen by bond rates. Bond yields flushed lower through the week. The two-year is now down at 1.4%, which is off its high that we saw at the start of the year of 2.8%, a 50% drop in yields on the short end of the curve, not the shortest end, but the two-year, since the beginning of the year. The 10-year is at 1.52%, which is down from 2.7% in January. And the 30-year, which started the year at 3%, is now at 2.01%. So essentially, combine this all together and we realize that, yeah, something is really problematic in the economy, but the hope trade is alive that the Fed is going to come to the rescue. And the Fed is going to drop rates probably two times this year because they're seeing there's a big slowdown. Now, the problem with this is that the Fed, the rate cuts don't create an instant impact. It takes months for a Fed change in policy to really make its way through the economy. But the idea that markets, equities, risk assets will adjust pretty quickly to the idea that there's a Fed rate cut and the Fed is going to continue to be dovish really played into how this week played out when it comes to markets. And when you add this to the mediocre job reports that came out Friday, yes, there was a 3.5% 50-year historic low of unemployment rate, but we know about those numbers. We understand that number. But the numbers really, when you broke that report down, were, I don't think, pretty strong. And if you add all this together, put it all together, it looks like, well, the Fed's definitely in play. So markets, which were down pretty substantially, bounced off the lows we saw on Thursday when they realized the Fed was probably going to be back in action. And we saw this reversal on Thursday and then a follow through on Friday when we reinforced the idea that, you know, these numbers aren't so good. So most markets ended the week down, but well off their lows. The NASDAQ Qs, the tech heavy NASDAQ ended up positive. Emerging markets actually held gains, probably because the dollar came down a bit. So a lot of you may be saying, okay, we got the information. What are you making all of this? What are you thinking? What's the plan? So I don't think that markets are necessarily out of the woods yet. I'll tell you that much right now. While we saw some oversold conditions flash up on Thursday, and we took advantage of that, I still think the mood of the market is cranky. I guess that's the best word to describe it. Cranky. You know, the other thing is, markets are also absent of any memory. Each day is a new day, and the trend overall is more of a consolidation, but it's reliant on what is the latest news and the last piece of information that hits the tape. So I think that there's going to be this continuation of this volatile action in markets. And if you're going to ask me, if you said, Andrew, okay, enough. What is the bottom line here? I think, I have to hedge a little bit here. I think a lot of this is going to be determined by earnings in this next quarter. And we're only talking about, a week and a half away from seeing the major banks report, 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks away from seeing the big tech report. And a lot of that is really going to be not necessarily about what their earnings were, their beat or their miss and the revenues. It's going to be their outlook. Already we've seen several companies come in with earnings that looked okay, but their outlook was downright miserable. Yeah, you look at FedEx as a great example of what was heralded as the real benchmark for global trade. And their outlook was not good at all. The commentary that came out of their management about trade and the trade wars and the lack of a product moving around the world right now is consistent with what we've seen in the manufacturing and the ISM numbers. So I think we're going to see a lot more about that come out. If we do, I don't think markets can actually hold, but we'll see. So I don't think, as I mentioned, we're out of the woods yet. But there's a lot more information that has to flash in. Remember something, that as we are going along this whole process, we're seeing that the continuation of Fed speakers, and last week was wow. I mean, wow. The amount of Fed speakers that came out last week was unbelievable. The cheerleading that goes on. We have a lot to really get through right now. But I guess first, let's maybe focus in on the things we have for next week. Now, the parade of Fed speakers is a little bit lower on the calendar for next week. And the cheerleading will kind of die down a little bit. And we'll be in a blackout period in about, 2 weeks, when the Fed is going to be looking to make their rate cut announcement at the end of the month for September. And we also have no idea what the October 10th China trade talks are going to bring or what impact that's going to have on the never-ending trade deal that's going on and how the comments that, oh, it looks like there's going to be a deal and then some new tariffs being slapped on because we have new tariffs being added on the 15th or an increase of tariffs being added on the 15th of October. I'm sure that we're going to get some, things are going well. There'll be more agricultural products being bought and all the yada, yada, yada. But I just can't imagine any major breakthroughs happening except for the superficial talk that's looking to appease markets. And of course, let's not forget that the ongoing and the seemingly packed news headlines about the continuation of the desire to take down Trump, right? I mean, what else is this? It's just, let's get that guy. Let's find a way. And if we can't get him on the Mueller report, well, what's the next thing? Because we don't think, I guess, the Democrats don't think they could beat him in the next election, so they got to find other alternatives to do this. The whole thing is messy, and I don't want to get into a whole political commentary about this, but it's revolting, let's just say that. But there'll be a constant stream of nonsense, I could tell you that, and I'm getting tired of it. And I think markets are also getting tired of it. And I will bet that many of you are shaking your head. Yeah. Yep. I'm pretty tired of this. The back and forth name calling, the continuation of, finger pointing and, you did this wrong. Well, you're an idiot and this guy is unfit. Well, he's a dummy. And well, look at him. He broke the rules and look at what's going on. Well, this is going on in the Ukraine. And, of course it wasn't me on the phone. It was Biden who did the bad thing. Both sides are just, they look like children. I mean, not to mention, as I've always said, amateurs. And I talked about this at the beginning. Some of this is bleeding over into daily life because you can't even get through my Twitter stream without finding tons of this political garbage that's clogging up the works of getting real information. Anyway, next week we have PPI on Tuesday. Looks like the inputs that we're going to see from price gains will be pretty muted. Maybe a 0.1% increase month over month. CPI similarly is going to be estimates of 0.1% on a month over month level. Then towards the end of the week, we'll have import and export prices and University of Michigan preliminary for October. And this is, I think this is going to be an important number. The prior was 93, down from 100 at the beginning of the year. And the starting number for this estimate is 91. So consumer confidence looks to be dropping. Nothing terrible, but consumers, I think, are also, this all coincides with my commentary on what's happening with, or how people are very tired of the whole, we're beat up. I think we feel beat up and exhausted from all of this crap that's going on in Washington. And I think that's going to probably feed into consumer confidence. Now, aside from markets acting, well, I guess we could say psychotic. I guess that's the best way. On a day-to-day basis, markets are absolutely off the hinge. And we've been watching the whole, the breath, the gainers, the losers, 52-week highs, new highs, lows. And it appears that something that we've seen before is starting to show through again. And this was, I guess this was at the end of last year. Towards, well, not the end, not the total end, but towards, I would say, June, July-ish of last year. Started to see that breath was breaking down. If you rewind the tape and go back to the podcast and the discussions we had in some of those episodes, I sounded a warning back then as well that, you know, something wasn't quite right with markets. One of the problems was it seemed that markets were kind of trading on thin ice, where we had the ice layer that was formed by the largest of large cap companies that there was a lot of interest in. And maybe it was the safety trade where people were going into those particular names thinking that, you know what, they got a lot of good buybacks, they got a good amount of cash on hand, earnings look somewhat impervious to, you know, negative headline issues, and they're really better than going into some of these smaller cap, mid-cap names that maybe don't have dividends, that don't do buybacks, et cetera. And what we're seeing now is a very similar situation. Underlying the markets, the small caps, the mid-caps, they're getting hurt while the large caps are attracting all of the investment or a majority of this. And there's a lot of reasons why that is. It could be the safety trade. Or it could be something just as simple as the algos doing what they do, right? The algos look to make sure that markets are moving in the direction. Right now, they're continuing to be in this, at least a lot of them, in longer-term buy the dip mentality. And if you buy the largest cap in market cap-based markets, then you're going to see the markets hold up. While underneath a lot of that, there's a lot of damage, a lot of carnage. And if it is, in fact, a, you know, we use this same discussion of a lake that has a thin layer of ice on it. And again, the ice in this circumstance is the mega cap outperformance and the place that money will go for, you know, just parking your money to be safe. If that ice cracks, now you have, again, another market meltdown. Now, I've mentioned this so many times recently that, you know, don't get ahead of the trade. Be aware of all the things that are going on. And so far, that's played out pretty well, right? Because we understand what the impact of some of these things that are going on in the markets, the trade wars, slowing economic conditions, global slowdown, global banks, negative interest rates, all the different things we've talked about. And again, we didn't want to get ahead of these things because it seems like none of that's really impacting markets too dramatically to the downside. And if it is, it's short-lived. So far, that's been good. Don't get ahead of it. Just be aware of it so you know that when things and if things do not turn around, we continue to go off of this ledge that keeps on getting expanded. And I talked about the whole negative rate time bomb with the long fuse a few episodes ago. But I'm starting to think that there are signs that, well, unless we get an immediate and a good resolution to this trade war, and if we don't see any change in the underlying fundamentals of the economies and the continuation of a slowdown, which we saw over the weekend with China, with some of their economic numbers. And Europe just, nothing good could be said about any of the European economies at this point. That really, we're headed for a new disastrous fourth quarter again. And maybe there's some indication of that with the recent volatility of markets, where the VIX went up to about 22 last week, dropped down to about 17 recently. But clearly, the elevated level of volatility, investor concern, drop of consumer confidence, and the economic numbers now no longer holding up is a real problem. And it could be that markets are being held up by ETFs, futures, again, algos. But again, you watch the breath and something's a little concerning. And it can be rectified. You may see a trade back into small caps, which are really lagging significantly. But everything right now is continuing to move into like the large cap growth area of the markets on a comparative basis. That's something to watch for. When you see names like Facebook and Microsoft and Apple, Google, those names getting the majority of the share, doing really well, holding up really well, you know, and the rest, when you see that a lot of companies are down, the retail sector is obliterated, energy just absolutely sucks this year, value getting beat up, small caps hurting, and the utilities leading the pack, REITs leading the pack, the interest rate sensitive, the safety trade style, risk off investments leading the pack. That sent a little bit of a hair raising to the back of my neck. Makes me a little bit nervous. So what do you do? Well, again, don't get ahead of the curve here, but be on the supreme ready. That's all I can tell you right now about that. And that's what we did. We are hedged out for part of our portfolio, for our trading portfolio. We shifted risk ever so slightly to the left, where I mean is lower risk, a little to the left there, when I'm considering low risk to the left and high risk to the right. A little bit of a movement to reduce risk down in client portfolios. At the same time, trying to take advantage of opportunities where they may lie. So let's kind of put that aside for a second. Let's get off of the topic of what's happening in the economy, the potential for some problems, but again, you know, just being aware of it, just being on your toes. But I think the big news of the week, I mean, historic news, major news. Something that has been developing for years and years. And the announcement that we saw last week by several key players on commissions dropping to zero for stocks, ETFs, options, which still have a little bit of a cost factor involved. Zero, that is newsworthy. That is historic. That is pretty impressive. I mean, wow. And did you see the reaction by some of these brokers? Not so good. Companies like Schwab and E-Trade, Ameritrade, TD Ameritrade, Interactive Brokers, and others. But the response of their stocks to this, because of the price cut to zero on their bread and butter, TD Ameritrade was down 28% last week. Schwab was down 14%. E-Trade was down 15%. Interactive Brokers down 11%. And a lot of other names out there, smaller names, kind of, you know, fell as well. Yeah, and some of these companies have been, I mean, we've seen it, right? Some of these companies have been gearing up for a lower rate. I mean, the race to the bottom on commissions and fees in ETFs has been going on for a while. And it begs the question, I think, you know, what are these companies going to do for revenue moving forward? I mean, we know there's a heap of their income that's really reliant on cash positions, their cash sweep funds, and they get money for pay for flow. And what I started thinking about was, okay, where are these companies going to get their income and make up for that major component that was trading commissions in the future? You have to think about that. Where's that going to come from? So I started thinking about this and I started going through the different ideas. Okay, well, We know that they're going to have low yields on their cash sweep accounts, maybe 0.2%, 0.3%, when you can probably get somewhere in the neighborhood of about 1.5%, more or less, in a money market. And a lot of people simply, well, they just leave their money. Just leave it in the money market, in the cash sweep. And as such, they're losing money. But the company, the brokerage, is making the differential. Unbeknownst to you, if you have very large portions of your portfolios in the cash sweep, you're probably underperforming by that amount. Now, what we do is, for most people, depending on circumstances and depending on the client's needs, so there's some caveats in here, but if we have cash that's sitting on hand that's not going to be used for a while, we move that into a higher yielding money market. We probably leave a small position in cash for things like opportunistic buys, withdrawals that are required on a regular basis for income for the client. There's a couple of other reasons why we may leave some money in the cash account for liquidity and instant liquidity. But if you put it into a money market, maybe you have a one-day lag for liquidity there. But again, it makes a lot of sense to do your best to make the most you can on any money that's sitting, and especially money that will be sitting for an money that's sitting for an elongated period of time inside of the money market or cash. If it's a position that's going to be held, probably move it into a higher yielding money market. So how are they going to make up for these shortfalls? Where are they going to come up with this money? So I started thinking about that. So I was thinking about that many of these companies may be starting to come out with even more. Some of them have already, but a greater number of proprietary type investments. So we got these robo deals that are free with Schwab, but what happens is you're using their funds. You're using their proprietary funds to invest in that particular instrument for the most part. And my concern for you, if you are in the retail division, and to understand that, let me just make this and explain this differential. Our clients are in the institutional division of whether it's Schwab or it's Interactive Brokers or, for example, TD Ameritrade. We use all three of those. So when you look at the difference in what you have the opportunity to invest in and possibly when you're contacted by the retail branches, be very much, and have your antennas up, be very much listening to and clear about what they're really promoting. Because if they start promoting, this takes me back 25, 30 years when proprietary trading vehicles were all the rage. We always stayed away from those. So if companies like, let's just take one as an example, Merrill Lynch, the broker says, hey, you know what? I think the Merrill Lynch U.S. Growth Opportunity Fund is a really good place for you to invest in. Well, that's considered a proprietary fund. It's a fund that is the same name as the firm representative. And oftentimes what that had was a bonus structure, higher payment process for the commission of the broker. Maybe even there were contests where they could win trips by the most sold because the companies wanted to bring in as much money as they can into their own proprietary instruments. We always, from day one, stayed away from anything proprietary, excluding money markets. You maybe not don't have a choice in some money markets where you work. So again, if we invest in the Charles Schwab money market, we don't consider that necessarily proprietary. But other things we stay away from. Let me think through this for a second. I don't think there's one proprietary vehicle, even an inexpensive ETF, inside of any of our accounts, because we want to make sure that we are giving our clients the best opportunity. Now, if in fact Charles Schwab had the lowest cost and the best performing in sector ABC that we wanted to invest in, we may utilize that because we don't get paid by them anyway. So there's no conflict of interest there. But when the conflict of interest really grows, where now the companies are going to be looking for a greater share of income from any of the investments that you own, because they're no longer making a commission on the trading that you're doing, That's when I think we need to be very aware of what's going on and understanding what the ramifications of that is. So is there going to be this transition that maybe some of these companies offer a lot more proprietary and push on the retail investor many of those investments? I would say probably. But at the same time, because commissions are zero, you have the opportunity to move into any position that you want to at this point, as many times during the day or week or month that you want to, at no cost. Well, no absolute cost. Put aside gains and losses and all that. We're talking about transaction costs. So I think that there's something to be said. We'll be watching for this. I think there's something. We'll be kind of tracking this, and I think you should probably keep your eyes and ears open for this as well. The whole idea that there is this potential for companies looking to gain market share through the use of either proprietary products or lower payouts. And this will be, there'll be a lot more you'll see on this coming up, I think, on the whole lower cost payouts for money markets, especially in the robo world, where they're telling you that they're managing your money at no cost, but you're using their proprietary funds, and a chunk of that money is sitting in very low interest-bearing accounts because they're not paying out, and they're making the differential on that. I think there's a lot to be seen there. This is why we stay away from that kind of environment. While we've always thought that the robo world, with the freebie robo world, is all about you get what you pay for. I think this is great for us. I'm thrilled they went to zero. Because if you think about it for a second, we really have a leg up on this. This benefits us immensely. Because now it opens a world of trading without regard to, well, what it costs. So while all of our trading is very low cost to begin with, this is free. This is free. Now, some brokers that are out there that have wrap fee accounts and other kinds of programs that put the commissions inside of the whole deal are going to probably have some problems with this. But we think this is great. We think this is a great move for the consumer, the investor, the retail or institutional side, but especially the institutional side, because now you just got a real freebie. So I'm pretty happy about this. I'm pumped. However, when it comes to what may go on in retail, I'm still not fully convinced that it's going to be a benefit for retail, unless you just do everything yourself, maybe, and you don't even deal with the brokers to begin with. So again, all it requires is you keep your eyes and your ears open. I know my listeners and the listeners of this show, you do that, because we have the smartest listeners anywhere. Let's face it. And I know you're always looking for, okay, what's the downside? Because when you talk to me, you always give me both sides of the discussion when I get your emails and letters and all that. So I think that's pretty cool. I think what they did, I'm pretty happy about how this all been going forth. I don't know what's going to be the outcome for some of these companies. I think there is a little bit of a buying opportunity for some of these companies that took such a beating. And I think if you really get down to this and look at what happened, there's probably going to be some more consolidation in this industry. I'm not speculating necessarily who's going to be buying who right now, but there are a lot of synergies and a lot of cost cutting that can go on. As technology has taken over much of the process, think about two of these firms. Think of any two, doesn't matter, that have very similar products, whether it's Schwab and TD or Fidelity. You put them together, right? You really don't need much more staff. You take the transition slowly, move people's accounts over slowly into the whole process. And eventually you really have now, all of a sudden, a major cost cut. I think there's going to be some of this going on in the industry, especially with zero costs on the trading right now. So keep an eye on that. On all of the indicators that will be coming out and information over the next week. We are not going to be doing DH Unplugged this week because of Yom Kippur. On Tuesday night it starts. But we will be back the following week. And of course, this podcast, The Disciplined Investor, will be here running. And I'm going to get a little bit more into it. I've been collecting some information about WeWork. We're doing some writing on this, on the fallout from WeWork and possibly what's going to be happening in some areas around the country. And I'll kind of leave that as a little bit of a surprise for what we're going to be talking about. But there are some things that really could be affected by the fallout of the IPO pulled by WeWork and some of the things that are going on. So we'll leave that for next week. And we'll talk about WeWork. And I've been gathering some clips from some experts in the area, some conversations, and I'll input my thoughts into that as well. But we are in the process of writing our quarterly commentary for clients. And this is going to be a component of that that I think really needs to be reviewed because there is some significance in terms of the fallout of how this spreads out and where this bulges to sectors that you may not have thought about in the economy. And we'll do that next week. In the meantime, I want to thank you for joining me. Of course, you can email me and send me information. Just go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. If you have any desire for us to look at your portfolios, maybe look at what's going on, if you're diversified correctly, and if you have that style of diversification, you can always contact me and we'll check it out. That's what we do. Go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and click on Ask Andrew and just ask away. I'll get back to you, maybe even have your comments on the show if it's appropriate. And we'll go from there. I want to thank you for joining me, and I'm going to see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.